Slate's TV Club Insider podcast is sponsored by the new ABC series, American Crime. This March, one crime will affect so many lives. From the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave comes the year's most extraordinary drama. Don't miss American Crime, premiering Thursday, March 5th, 10, 9 Central, on ABC.
The following podcast contains spoilers. We strongly recommend you watch the episode of The Americans we're discussing before you listen to this podcast.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Slate's TV Club Insider Podcast for Season 3, Episode 5 of The Americans, Selang Pass. In this episode, we're going to talk about disguises, accents, and KGB sex training. I'm Molly Nussbaum, the script coordinator here at The Americans. We are back today in our writer's office in Brooklyn, New York. I'm here with my bosses, Joel Fields and Joe Weisberg, and the star of our show, Matthew Reese.
I am genuinely, having listened to the entire thing, I'm mirth intimidated.
What do you do for the show, Matthew?
As little as possible.
We've been saying that for years.
I know, but we've kept it quiet this far.
Well, now I've ruined it. I'm so sorry.
No
Welcome
problem.
Aboard, Philip Jennings.
Thank you. Good to be here on this pirate ship.
What's the accent you're doing? I'm confused.
It's a new. There's a new wave of American actors who found that if you adopt a British accent, you've got more chance of finding gainful employment in the United States of America.
Mm, very clever.
That seems to be working.
Yes.
I attended a small accent school in Indianapolis, where they like to their specific one is Welsh.
That's great. And you immediately started working right after that.
I did. And things took off.
Great.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes, it's been glorious.
We're out.
That's enough of that. Speaking of disguises, good ones and bad, there are 5 iterations of Philip Jennings in this episode. There is Philip Jennings, American house husband.
Yes.
There is young...
Hang on, whoa, go back.
Yeah,
go
that's
back.
Not a disguise.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
And also, I'm not sure, like, that's the first thing that comes into your head when you say Philip Jennings. Philip Jennings, American house husband.
I thought that was a great way of breaking
he's
that
also,
down.
He's a spy.
He's a spy.
That's also not really him. You know what I mean? It's like,
what
you're
do you mean?
You're the Russian playing the American.
What? Go
this
back.
This can't
go
be
back.
The first time you've
go
heard
back.
That way of breaking it down.
What? Because Philip Jennings' house husband.
At least travel agent. At least travel agent.
All right, you can be a travel agent.
There's a whisper of adventure about him if he's a travel
he's
agent.
He's got a job.
So the fact
house
that you
husband.
Just said whisper of adventure.
What I'm saying is if you say travel agent, I think it offers a wisp of adventure about something. I.e. they travel a little bit.
You're talking about somebody.
I hate other people
You're
travel.
Talking about someone who killed 4 Navy SEALs at
yes.
a secret
yes.
training facility 8 months ago.
Yes, you went with the suffix house husband.
Yeah, that's another day at the office, I would say. I don't know.
An office would suggest he left the house.
Touche.
Molly, that was good though. You didn't back down for a long time against withering attack. That
well,
was
now
good.
You can't see this in the podcast, but he's standing above me holding a club, and I'm feeling nervous. So I'm just going to let that one go.
Yes.
Ugh. But there's Misha the Russian, who we see in the flashback.
Yes.
Who some would say... is occasionally disguised as Philip Jennings.
The flashback at the end of this
yeah,
episode.
The very end.
Right.
Then we see Clark. We see the Scott disguise when you're with Yusuf.
Yes.
And then the Jim Baxter disguise
yes.
with Kimberly.
Yeah.
How the hell do you keep this all straight? Because we're also never shooting one episode at a time.
No.
And we're not shooting in order. And it's all over the place. Do you have a way where you have to sort of keep it straight in your head of both who you're playing and what you're going after, but also like where Philip's at in... portraying that person?
I think I've maintained all along that I was wary at the beginning of The Americans of trying to make different characters sort of extreme versions of themselves or sort of, you know, I think there's danger of caricature in that. It picked up on little things you said about the CIA when you talk about lying in the CIA. I may have imagined this, but I thought you said something about keeping it as close to the truth as possible or something like that. And that's what I've tried to do with the characters. I'm not trying to make them sort of extreme differences from one to the other. I'm trying to keep, you know, I'm trying to make it as real as possible. So if the audience believes you, the hope is the person you're acting in front of will believe you also. Or, you know, one informs the other, you hope.
Does Clark feel like, on any level, like less of a disguise at this point now that he's been around basically almost as long as Philip?
Absolutely. And it's funny. I think people project a lot onto a character or you know, often people say, oh, when you do this as Clark, and I'm going, I have no idea what you're talking. I'm literally now put on the wig and glasses and talk to Martha. And, you know, and to me, there's very, I don't know, maybe it's because I've been doing the two for long enough that the lines or the borders blur a little, and I don't find there's this great difference. And I think as the seasons have progressed, we're now at a place that, you know, obviously where there's such intimacy between the two, but it's been this great foil, this sort of dramaturgical device where Philip says a lot of truth to Martha, I think, and therefore that grounds it in something very real.
Well, it's funny because we talk about that when we write as just another real marriage.
Yeah.
And by now that relationship is real, I think, to all of us. The episode starts with Martha dragging Clark to this foster facility to look at kids. Mm. And there's a scene of a husband managing his wife's expectations. Mm. And then the next scene is Philip with Elizabeth talking about it. And in a way, it's just another scene of a husband managing his wife's expectations.
I know. One of the many layers of the show. But it's sort of amazing that, you know, you basically, in one marriage, talk about another marriage. What other shows can do that?
Joe, did you know from the beginning, like when you were writing the pilot and then moving into season one, that Clark would be such a big character, or that Martha's storyline would continue so much? Because we don't see a ton of Martha in the pilot, really, and we do get the sense that she's had several visits with Clark. They have some sort of rapport. Did you imagine from the beginning that this relationship would take off in the way it did?
I don't really remember, to tell the truth. I knew that there were these, these stories of KGB illegals who married women. So I thought that was a very interesting idea, that you could have a long-term relationship. But I, looking back, I can't remember.
Well, was that the bit that was called the secretary's offensive?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there was a initial case that the KGB had where someone had recruited or had married a secretary of an important official. I think it might have been a NATO official or something like that. And they got a lot of intelligence out of it. And so when you hit one and it goes well, you try to repeat it. It's like Hollywood, right? So the KGB thought, well, let's do it again all over the world. So they launched what they called the secretary's offensive, where they specifically went after women who were secretaries to important men in political positions.
They've just found this out, that sort of junior agents from WME were sleeping with secretaries from CAA to sort of gain intelligence about, you know, mm-hmm. what projects they had coming out.
So the disguise we're actually seeing more of in this episode than Clark is this new guy, Jim Baxter.
Yeah.
Who was spending a lot of time with Kimberly.
We love that disguise, though. There's something just great about that wig and glasses. It's got such a... It just fits that character.
I know, that's worked incredibly well.
It was tricky to find, though, because it had to be real. It had to be a good disguise.
It had
to appeal to her.
I know.
And it had to allow enough of Philip's face to show through for a long, expressive storyline.
Yeah. No, that did take a long time to get right. And the sort of conversations in costume were hilarious. Like... various members of the costume department sort of trooped in and go, if you were 16, look at this. If you were 16, and I was like, oh, shut up.
I feel like a piece of meat.
If you were 16, yeah.
Shut up. Well, let's talk about that. How do you approach getting comfortable with a storyline that can only work to the extent that it's uncomfortable?
Yeah. And you know, as you know, initially I was a little like, oh God,
we had some talks.
I know, and how would this work out?
This is the part of the podcast where we're going to make it seem like the whole thing was your idea and we had nothing to do with it. We resisted it.
What's wrong with you?
Yes. We've said no to this storyline for 3 seasons. But we finally caved in. He's relentless. I don't know where it's going. We don't know how to wrap it up.
But so often things happen without us talking about them, or we talk about little scenes. But this was one where it took some talking through.
Yeah. And then it sort of struck me plain as day. You know, I was sort of going, oh, how is this going to... You know, there was a degree of me being uncomfortable about this. And then I went, oh, hang on a minute. The whole idea is that Philip is uncomfortable about... this, I'm getting it, this whole drama thing. I see what they're trying to do. God, they're good. And then you just approach it like that. And then it goes, well, it's fine. Because what it actually does, it gives you the inner for free. Because you're sort of playing the scene with her. And inside you're going, oh, God. And that's what Philip's doing. So, you know, it's just lacing more layers, which is what you want.
I remember something you said about it, too, which was that there's a part of Philip the whole time, whenever he's with her, that is kind of I don't remember if it was unconsciously or consciously or somewhere or both, trying to blow it the whole time because he's so uncomfortable with it. So he wants it to succeed and he wants it to fail. And that kind of informs the whole thing in such an interesting way.
Well, one thing that was really interesting about that was, of course, because you're working with a 16-year-old, the more you try to blow it, the more on the hook she gets.
I know, it's weird. I remember that conversation because you said you want to be, Philip wants to be able to go back and said, I tried, it didn't work. And so those initial scenes, there's something, I can't quite remember what it is, but there's a few moments that he's a bit devil may care with it and it hooks her in more. And he's like, oh God, that didn't work well. But then further on, he's hooked in on a far more emotional level when he begins to realize how sort of, you know, sad life is. That sounds awful, but yeah, you know, I suppose there's a reason they go after these certain targets, and the sort of more humane element is harder to juggle than when you're trying to extract information or time alone with a briefcase.
Well, Gabriel says to Philip in this episode that when he's sort of trying to impress upon him, like, you're going to have to sleep with this girl if you want the operation to succeed long term. He says that conscience is a dangerous thing, which I feel like has been Philip's problem, not just this season, but last season with just the carnage and a lot of death and destruction last season. And now this is giving him this sort of just deeply uncomfortable emotional thing that, on top of the Paige conflict, which obviously runs right alongside the Kimberly development. Where is Philip's breaking point on this? And how do you think these different things are sort of weighing on him independently?
I think over this, especially the second season, we begin to see, it was the emergence of this, of the weight of it all on Philip, and how the fine cracks were beginning to show, and giving way to sort of, you know, Bible tearing. And to me, that's the most interesting to play. It's the hand in hand conflict of having a very strong mandate, which you have to do in order to keep everyone's heads above water, but struggling with it enormously with your conscience, and that's what gives it the meat for me, the juice.
Guys, I've done the math, and you've seen the graphs. Philip has killed so many more people than Elizabeth. What's up with that? Why do you make him so mean?
I wonder that I wonder if people perceive the opposite, because I have a lot of people
saying
to
me, perceive the opposite,
Elizabeth's
which is
doing
why
all
the
dirty
the
work. Why doesn't Philip do it?
Well, I wonder if the graph should go up on the Slate site so people can see
it. Well, not till the end of the season.
I'm a humane killer. I'm a headshot guy. I'm like, you know, she beats up Margot Mandel. She does it for pleasure. I'm a necessity. I'm a necessity killer.
Episode one of season two was just like a bloodbath. You killed 6 people in that episode.
Well, maybe that's why his numbers are high.
That's
why
they are.
And also, are you counting all the people he killed by accident in the submarine?
I am.
Well, that seems unfair.
Come on.
That seems unfair.
Reagan
killed those people.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Okay, only if you share that, then it's a little more even.
Share what?
This dead Soviet submarine.
Yeah, she was in on the mission.
All right, fine. I'll take that one back.
Neither of them killed those people. You guys are joking, right?
Yes. No? Yes.
I can't tell.
100%. It's on the list. It's an
serious?
Asterisk. I'll show it to you. There's a graph.
Neither of us can tell if you're joking.
What is Philip's relationship with Gabriel like, and how is it different than we've seen with other handlers? He didn't have as complicated a relationship with Claudia as Elizabeth did.
You didn't break a nose.
No, true. At least not on screen that we saw.
Yes.
I don't know what you and Margot did in the streets.
That was wrestling. Very little danger, sort of breaking bones.
What is Philip sort of getting out of this relationship with Gabriel, and how is that either meeting or failing his expectations this season?
What's been great about, you know, every season is sort of like the beginning of it's an emergence of something. You know, season one was the emergence of Philip and Elizabeth. And what's great is giving Gabriel the backstory, the history they have together, and then bringing back in, it allows for a very enriched playing field. So as I viewed Gabriel as a very paternal figure coming into the season three, very quickly he's turned around to be the person who's one of my greatest thorns in my side in his coveting of my daughter.
Well, that's a weird way to put it, coveting.
Why?
Of your daughter. No, that's that'll work. Whose idea was the Scrabble thing? Did Frank come in with that?
Yes.
Mr. Langella, as I call him?
Yep.
Have you actually played him in Scrabble?
He's incredibly good.
Really?
Yes, he's incredibly good. He's very good.
That's not surprising. He's corrected us a number of times on script errors.
He's corrected me as well. In the best way possible.
No, he's very gentlemanly about it.
Correcting.
I have yet to catch him in an error.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he's thorough and precise, which is everything you want Gabriel to be.
How so? How is Frank thorough?
In as much that, you know, he can pick up on maybe the smaller nuances that you're slightly ignoring and encourage them to be brought a little more to the forefront, which gives you... Are you still awake?
Mm. Well, you know, as you talk about this, it makes the process sound very serious, deep, rich, textured, and artistic. But I've seen you on set, and you and Carrie and Frank will be on set, and you're two-thirds of the way through the dirtiest joke imaginable, and then whoever's directing says, action, and suddenly it's Philip, Gabriel, and Elizabeth in the midst of a very intense emotional scene, and then they'll say, cut, and then without missing a beat, the punchline comes. Would you explain to us, like, all joking aside, how do you track that?
That's him. And I tell you why. Because he has the greatest sort of arsenal of filthy jokes that he'll happily tell. And when you crack in a scene, it's usually to do with one person. But what he can do is he can tell the joke. And then when they say action, he's so laser-like in his focus at you that you know you can't go and you can't wave. He doesn't allow it. It's those people who kind of titter or have the twinkle that allow you to laugh, but you kind of know, it's like with a silverback, you go, if I do something wrong here, he'll just split my head open. So I do not, he gives you the severity of what would happen if you went.
Coming up, we'll talk about KGB sex training right after a word from our sponsor.
This Slate TV Club Insider podcast is sponsored by ABC. This March, it's time to experience American crime. One offense will send shockwaves through a community like never before, shattering families and igniting a media frenzy in this powerful, thought-provoking, and timely series. From the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave comes the year's most extraordinary new drama. Felicity Huffman and Timothy Hutton star. American Crime premieres Thursday, March 5th, 10/9 Central on ABC.
The KGB sex training flashback is something that the writers have been trying to work in since season one. And
I'm interrupting. Because, I'll tell you why. For seasons one, did I do it in two? I can't remember. But for season one, which was only 2 short years ago, I used to do my own flashback work. And then come season three, and I thought, that won't be a problem for me. You know, a bit of a heavier wig maybe, you know, a heavy filter, and off I go. And I happened to walk past a sort of a casting conversation about the young Philip, which is a breaking moment in any actor's career when they finally realize you can't do your own flashback.
You can't play 17-year-old.
Play 17.
But you can still play elderly Philip. Yeah.
Don't worry. Yes. You can play your father in the flashback to World War II. And this is another, no word of a lie. The beginning of this season, Laurie Hicks used to do for Clark was draw in some lines for me. And she was so elated to almost say, I almost don't have to draw in the lines anymore. And I was like, my God, these have been rough 2 years.
You're like, thank you. Yeah. You didn't have to say that thought out loud. That one could have stayed on the inside.
Yes.
But I know the writers have wanted to do this pretty much from the beginning. One writer in particular, it was in 2 episodes last season, and it came out of both of them. And of all the things I've had to research on the show, which I am surely on watch lists for, this is the one where, like, I don't know, I'm in all sorts of databases because I did all this research last season to see if there was any actual literature on clandestine sex training.
And?
Mostly fan fiction and erotica. Not a lot of actual stuff, you know?
Okay.
But hey, you had to read it to figure it out.
So. But in the intelligence service, you know, is this sort of, what's the reality of sort of?
Well, there's one known case that is reported in the Matrokin archive, which is that there was a British guy who had been a police officer, and he was recruited by the KGB to be a Romeo, somebody that they wanted to send around the world.
That's a lie. I wasn't a police officer. I was a Boy Scout.
It was a Boy Scout. And anyway, this guy was – he had retired or been fired. I can't remember which. And they wanted him to go around the world and – recruit people, men and women, to spy for the KGB. And he was a handsome, appealing guy. I think he was in his 30s or 40s. I can't remember which. And after he had been recruited, he was at a hotel somewhere outside of England, and there was a knock at his door. He had not apparently been prepared for this. And the KGB had sent two beautiful Russian women to give him sex training for a couple of weeks. That's the one known case in the literature. A little bit different from what we arranged for young Philip.
Dear God. Yes. And at the other end of the scale, Philip Jennings, at a tender age of 18.
But the sex training was really one part of it. But what I think was interesting to watch unfold from script through the set and the editing was that conversation between Philip and Elizabeth at the very end. And that question about, is that what you do with me? Mm. One of the things we talk about is that we see so many different interpretations for these things from a writing standpoint. And we love all of that variety and all of that richness. But you have to find a singular way as an actor to play one of that or prioritize that. Mm. How do you come at those moments?
More often than not, is the immediate instinctive thought I'll always go with. So to me, that line was, I felt so, it still haunts me slightly because there's so much reality in it for a marriage that you go, you know, for a long standing, oh no, it's marriage, a relationship, you know, that has those, oh, we're going deep, has those cadences and ebbs and flows, you know, within a sexual relationship. It sometimes is, you know, it's maintained by an element of imagination, sort of sometimes unbeknownst to the other partner. So to me, that one line sort of slew me and churned my stomach and made me feel uncomfortable. But it's so much truth in it and so much, I was going to say resonance, but I mean truth.
You know, I think that I'll never forget a call we had with the network about that line. We were talking about it and they really loved it. And they just happened to ask, you know, what was our thinking about that line? And there were about four of us sitting around the table, four writers sitting around the table. And we ran around the table and we had never really had this discussion internally because we all just were in love with the line. So we went around the table and each person said what they made of it. And there were four completely different answers, completely different, but each one just really moving and powerful. And I think that's one of the times when something is very strong. Mm.
Someone said in the writer's room, and I believe they were quoting someone else, so pardon the out of context lack of attribution, but I think what they said was successful long-term marriages are either an incredible triumph of imagination or an incredible failure of imagination. There's not much in between.
Oh my God, that's so good. That's so good.
Well, I think that line, it just invites you to bring your life into what you feel when you hear that line, which I think is great.
This is also, we have seen more flashbacks to Elizabeth's life and childhood than we have Philip throughout the series. So this is also one of the few windows we've had into Philip's early life and how some of that is playing into his psyche. I know you guys have, Joe and Joel, have written flashbacks for Philip that have come out or have just been taken off the table.
Go on. What happened? What could have happened
you'll
to young
Philip? No, we didn't know who was going to play young Philip.
He just doesn't look 6 or 7 anymore.
I was thinking we had a 25-year-old Philip. I couldn't figure out who could play him.
Yeah. We were going to do the 30-year-old Philip, but then also...
Just couldn't reach. It was too much of a stretch.
The audience will not go along with that.
I mean, look at the way he walks now. Different sort of year. It's like Roger Moore.
Do you, Matthew, have you like built any Philip backstory up for yourself that you think informs a lot of the way he interacts with his kids, the way he interacts with Elizabeth, and the way he approaches the job? Or do you just try to work with what's on the page and what you know about Philip?
Bizarrely enough, and this may sound like coincidence, but this is the kind of backstory I gave myself is very close to what Elizabeth's is, and it's that thing where I think you have the V in the road whereby I think Philip was raised in, you know, as were so many of them coming out of the war in great poverty, and how that manifests itself is the way we see he enjoys the more materialistic elements of American life. And also, you know, probably quite possibly grew up without a father, or, you know, lost a father at an early age. And then, therefore, that manifests its way in that he wants to be the best father he can possibly be, or as good as he can possibly be. So that was the backstory I gave for Phil.
One of our writers a couple weeks back talked about one of the things he likes as a writer in television as opposed to film or stage is that you get to spend so much more time with the characters. And therefore, not only do you get to show the audience more, but you get to know the character better as you go because things can change and develop and all that good stuff. And I know that you've come from a more of a stage background. You've done a bit of television as well before this. Do you, as an actor, feel like there's a big difference in how you approach the character because we're going to spend so much more time with him on screen than we would in just a play or a movie? Or do you kind of look at them all as part of the same larger piece?
No, I always approach, you know, all three the same. The sort of the beauty of television is the unfolding that's allowed. And that, you know, we in this season especially, we see it, you know, that it's actually addressed, that, you know, things do change, and it's a real luxury to have that, to evolve in that way over such a period of time. You know, it's still, you know, yes, you can do a play for 6 months to a year, but you're doing the same play, whereas, you know, there's a real journey and a real arc in television.
How do you guys feel, Joe and Joel, that if at all, that you know, Elizabeth's obviously had this huge change at the end of last season where she said, you know, I've changed my mind. I do think we should recruit Paige. Do you think that Philip has gone through as a similar big change, or do you think that he is sort of still moving towards that, or has changed in different ways? How do you see his transformation so far in the series?
I think Philip has been going through, you know, we talk a lot about both these characters and their evolution because we're very interested in characters not evolving. You know, I think different people have different takes. Some people think that, you know, characters in television dramas who don't change is the most realistic way to look at characters. And Joel and I have both felt from the beginning that characters who do change and evolve are more interesting. And I think Philip's evolution has, in a sense, been easier to track because you see him struggling with questions really from the beginning. You know, you see things on his conscience and you see how he struggles with them. And that is a character in evolution. When a character is dealing with something like that, he cannot but evolve. And you'll I don't want to give anything away, but you'll see how he evolves. But you're already seeing that there are things he doesn't want to do and things that when he does them, it hurts. And that's a person whose soul is moving on to a new place. His whole consciousness is developing. I think the same thing, not the same thing, but there's also an evolution taking place with Elizabeth, but we talk about it developing in kind of cracks, little you know, cracks in her that develop more slowly, and sort of where it's going to take her or where she's going to go is also something we're not going to talk about or tell you where it is, but I see her in evolution also. Anybody else?
I agree.
No, that was great, Joe. Thank you.
I'm afraid of spoiling anything.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Joe essentially spilled the beans on the entire four seasons ahead.
This is why we can't do it
ahead.
Live.
I mean, it's Elizabeth's no wonder, a man.
This is what I often say. Really? Quit the CIA or was let go?
It's all suddenly clear. Seriously, guys, thank you so much for joining us this week and talking about episode 5.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, join us next week when we have a very exciting guest. Carrie Russell will be joining us here in the writer's office. I'm Molly Nussbaum. Thank you for listening.